Today in our hot seat, we have Peter Reynolds, co-CEO of MemoQ. Welcome, Peter. Good to have you.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you, Sarah Ninga.
Nice to have you. And Peter, are you ready for this? Shall we do this?
No, of course I'm not ready.
Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers. Our hosts today are Nimzi's Inga Boonen, Chief Growth Officer, and Sarah Hickey, VP of Research.
Peter, in one sentence, can you tell us what MemoQ does?
Yeah, I've seen this on this show before. It's one of these questions where you're supposed to say something very humble, but what you mean is your company's the greatest on earth. What MemoQ does is we provide software so that translation professionals that are in the premium translation sector can thrive.
Sarah said before you are the co-CEO at the company. Was that the first career that you dreamed of when you were a kid?
Well, my first career was in social work. My first job was working in a night shelter, 4 days working, 2 days off, and sleeping on the premises. And it was quite tough. And I spent about 11 years working in psychiatric hospitals and various different shelters for homeless people in Dublin and Bradford in England. This was quite a change. I decided when I was in England that I wanted to move back to Ireland, and I found a job for a company that was called Softrans, which at the time was almost me. As soon as I joined, it was bought by Berlitz. And it was quite an interesting company to be part of because Softrans effectively invented the whole localization market. They figured out that there were all these technical companies out there who wanted to go global and didn't know how to do the translation part. And, you know, a small little company in Ireland suddenly became quite crucial to them and then was bought by Berlitz, then Bound and Limebridge and so on.
Amazing. When you're not working, how do you like to spend your time?
We have 7 corgi dogs and a cat. And one of these dogs, Rusty, is very good on social media. And I get a job as being his assistant. He has one follower who's got 2 million followers. So whenever this person retweets a tweet from Rusty, it becomes global. It goes viral very quickly.
Wow.
But I spend a lot of time taking photographs for my dog's social media account.
So where can we find Rusty?
Yes.
She's on Twitter and Facebook.
I wonder what she has to say. I'm going to check it out.
The founding company of MemoQ is based in Hungary.
Yep.
And I believe that you now live in Ireland, if I understood
I live in Warsaw, Poland.
Oh, okay.
And at the moment, I'm in Tenerife, which is quite nice. I'm looking out the windows at the Atlantic Ocean, which is quite spectacular.
Yeah, that's very nice. Okay. So you're right now in Spain, you've lived in Ireland, maybe also in Hungary, not sure. Never lived there. Anyway, if you were given a chance to visit 3 new countries, which ones would you choose and why?
I really like a book called The Number One Ladies Detective Agency by Alexander McCall Smith. And that's based in Botswana. And the way the book portrays Botswana is quite spectacular. It just makes it sound like almost a heavenly place full of wonderful people. I'd love to visit there. I've never been to Finland, and you know, over the summer we've seen the Prime Minister get into trouble for dancing, and it strikes me that's a place maybe much cooler than I imagined. So Finland might be a place well worth visiting. A place that I really love is Borneo, and I've been there a couple of times, but I've always been to the Malaysian part of the island. And I quite like to go to Indonesia and visit Indonesia and Borneo.
What's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
I read a book called The Toyota Way, which is about how Toyota, you know, how they were successful and the reasons behind that. And one of the interesting things there is that all the people they talk to, when they talk about their strategy, they say it's built on two pillars: respect for people and continuous improvement. And it's so clever and so, you know, concise. I think that's quite beautiful. And also you can see when you look at really great companies like, you know, and Intel when Andy Grove was running it, or Microsoft now with Satya Nadella running it, they seem to have the same idea. The pillars of respect, build a strategy on, or respect for people and continuous improvement. And I think that's good advice.
You're the co-CEO now of a very well-known company in the language industry. In your whole career, what would you describe as your first proper breakthrough?
When we were starting MamaQ, we were very confused as to how, you know, how to grow it. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we started looking at all our competitors and how they were approaching the market. I discovered that there were companies like Across, Ontram, and so on, and they were all aiming at enterprises. And then there was other companies like Wordfast and Deja Vu, who were aiming at the translators. And SDL at the time was aiming both at the translators and the enterprises. So what we discovered was that there was a big gap there where everybody was thinking how they would get to LSPs is either enterprises telling them to use a particular software solution, or for translators advising them. And there wasn't much targeting of LSPs directly. Mm-hmm. So we decided to go for that. We firstly tried to figure out why they weren't targeting LSPs. And one of the things that we discovered is that there's, in many LSPs, there was probably somebody who was a lot more knowledgeable than most of the salespeople in translation technology. And, you know, it could have been a more difficult sale because the likelihood that people at LSPs knew what the awkward questions to ask. But we started targeting them and then grew at quite a phenomenal rate. And we were a Deloitte Fast 50 company for four years in a row.
Okay. Now, as the co-CEO, what would you describe as the biggest challenge that you face basically today in your day-to-day life? You know, in your everyday life as the CEO of the company, what is your biggest challenge?
I've been looking at doing a lot of work around strategy, and this is something where you always have to explain it. You can't for a moment just say, well, we talked about that 6 months ago and it doesn't work. You know, everybody knows it, then it's okay. That doesn't work. You have to constantly be answering questions, and people have got very valid questions about how does this affect my job? Like when Balazs, Kish and I became co-CEOs, I saw my role as being that there were people in the company who had a very clear idea what their job was. They had a very clear idea of what their team's job is, but they weren't so sure about what the company was doing in terms of how it was going to grow and whatever. Mm-hmm. And they weren't sure about how their job and our team's job fitted in with the company's job. But my role was to make sure that they knew the connection between that. And one of the things that I found is that this is probably the most common problem in management at the moment, where there's a disconnect between people that are actually doing the work and between what whoever's leading the company thinks they're going. And that's a huge challenge, I think, for any company. And it's one of these challenges that if you take your foot off the wheel, if you ignore it for a while, it will come back. So you have to constantly be working on this.
Yeah, makes complete sense. Thank you for sharing that. So this is when we're looking at the current situation, right? But looking back now at whether that's MemoQ or any other time in your own career, was there something that you can recall, like what you would define as a failure or a mistake, a big one that you then ended up learning from? Is there something you can share?
One of our problems at MemoQ is we often stick with a mistake long after we should have stopped it. And we've done this at various times. Like, we had a technology called TM Repository. And one of the problems with this is that it was mildly successful. And the people that were saying this was really good were very knowledgeable people in big LSPs or people that had been looking at trends, and that made it more difficult to decide to stop it. And this is something that we've had difficulty when something should be stopped. We've often let it go on a bit longer than we should have.
Mm-hmm. So it has more to do also with giving a good idea a really good shot as well at working before moving on.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so now the complete other side of the coin. Can you tell us a success story, either from your personal side, from the career, or related to the company, anything that stands out?
Well, one of the things that's quite funny is that MemoQ originated in a small town in Hungary called Kojula. And in that town, there's a restaurant called the Hamburger Bar. And when we started the company, our first ambition was to have more revenues than this hamburger bar. We didn't care about SDL or across or whatever. As we've grown on, did another thing where we were trying to be successful is that we figured out that Germany was the country where most of our competitors originated from. It's where Tratus came from. It's where OnTram came from. It's where Cross came from. And it also had the most sophisticated translation companies in the market. So again, when we were quite a young company, we set out to break Germany. Our idea was that if we could make it in Tratus's backyard, we could make it anywhere. The rest would be easy. It may have been a little naive, but we proved to be, Germany is still our strongest market.
Mm-hmm. Very Sinatra-esque approach. If I can make it there, I can make it anywhere. Just in Germany, not New York, but looking at the clients, is there something, do you have a specific pet peeve when it comes to clients, or are there common struggles across your client base that you have to overcome?
Have you ever met many MemoQ customers? Because they're all incredibly good looking, really bright people. It's terrible being in the same room as them because you just feel inadequate. There are also, one of the wonderful things with them is they've got some really clever opinions. And part of our problem that we have is we've not got the capacity to implement every single thing that they want. So we figured out ways of how to do that better by talking to them. Like we had, for example, a customer who was saying that it's impossible to be able to say what you don't want to appear in a find and replace. And they mentioned this on a chat forum. Another customer said, you can do that already. You just use regex. And the customer said, you can use regex. I can't. So we talked to an awful lot of them and figured out a way, what was wanted was not what the original customer had. What was wanted was an easier way to implement regex so they can do what they want. And that ended up with something much more powerful than the original proposal. So I don't have problems with our customers, apart from jealousy if they're all so good looking.
So as a CEO, of course, you're looking at profitability, and you already mentioned the strategy of the company. But I think one big part as well, of course, I would assume, is also to keep your team motivated. Yeah. How would you do that? What makes you a great leader in your own opinion?
To be honest with you, with the whole thing of profitability and that, that's something that it doesn't take up a huge amount of my time. My time is much more taken up with listening to people, talking mm-hmm. with them about issues. We do various things to try to make sure that everybody knows where we're going. Every Friday, myself or Balaj will send out an email to the company, which sometimes got information about competitors, but it's often got about why we're doing something. We also have other mechanisms where we communicate about the company strategy and why we're doing it. We have regular meetings with small teams to discuss this. We've also got company meetings where people demo things. The essential thing here in keeping people motivated is communication. Mm-hmm. When they feel that they understand what the company is doing and why, and obviously why is a bigger thing than to understand than simply what we're doing. I really appreciate the team that we've got. Like, we had our company meeting last week and we had about 120 people there, and it was 3 days, but it felt like it was over in a couple of seconds. And it was really great to see so many motivated people.
I think Inge and I can relate to that. We just had a company on site as well for a week, and it felt like it was just 2 days or something. It was very fast.
True.
One last question. What advice would you give to young entrepreneurs starting their own business in the language industry today?
Firstly, I'd say, language industry is fun. It's a good mm-hmm. place to go. There are nice people here. And go for it. The second thing I'd say is that people are the center of it. Even if it's a high-tech opportunity you're going for, people are at the center of this. And one of the things that we've been really lucky with our thing is that we've got some wonderful competitors. There is absolutely, it's no fun if you're competing against somebody that doesn't do the work. And it's really great when your competitors try very hard against you, because then you'll try very hard and it makes it much more fun, I think. So I would just suggest that they go for it.
I like that, Peter. And thank you so much for joining us in the hot seat.
Thank you.
I hope it wasn't too tough on you.
Thank you. I'll tell you privately.
Okay, sounds good. If anyone else feels like letting off some steam and you're part of the C-suite at a company in the language services or technology industry, sign up with us if you dare to sit in our hot seats.
And for the viewers at home, thank you so much for watching, and watch out for the next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV and as a podcast on the NIMSY website. We'll see you there.